Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
Good morning, friends and neighbors. Thank you so much for being here with us on May Day. It's May Day for Sunday morning wake-up call. That's the first Sunday in May. Thank you for being here. It's a beautiful Sunday for those of you listening to the Sunday morning wake-up call, 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, 434-284-9470. Write that number down because this is a topic that everybody should have an opinion about. And we have folks here that you can call up and share your opinion to. Get your groove on. Give your questions to Dorothy Thomas. Here this morning, the rural legal advocate for the Shelter for Help and Emergency here in Charlottesville. Good morning, Ms. Thomas.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Kat Dillon here as well, the events coordinator.
Hi, thanks for having us on.
At the shelter. Thanks the two of you for being here on your Sunday.
Happy to be in.
Absolutely.
Well, not everybody wants to spend their Sundays here. I don't know why. They obviously have problems because this is the place to be for important topics here in Charlottesville. We are going to talk about abusive partner relationships, what to do, how to spot them. The importance of the shelter here in Charlottesville, how to support it, what the shelter does to support others. Thank you for helping with that discussion. So the shelter, what's also known as SHE, capital S, capital H, capital E, people see that in the area. So not everybody knows, you know, you see that logo, you see it next to Sarah, capital S-A-R-A. What's the difference between the two? Tell me, what is the shelter and what's the difference between that and what and Sarah?
Sure. Do you want to take this one, Dorothy?
Sure. So you'll find many agencies across the area are domestic violence agencies or sexual assault agencies. You may have one agency that covers both domestic violence and sexual assault, and they're called dual agencies. SHE is an agency that works solely with victims of domestic violence, while Sarah works with victims of sexual assault.
And who do you serve?
We serve anyone who's been a victim of domestic violence, intimate partner violence, male, female, and children who have been affected as well.
Can you be, can someone call you up if they have, or can someone walk in your door? Can someone just call you up? Can someone, does someone need to have been physically abused? I mean, is that the only way to? I always find this to be a difficult conversation without, and I don't want to say make light of it, but there always seem to be words that don't fulfill or properly use this, so you need to correct me when I don't say it in the proper manner that would be appropriate for the shelter. Okay. But understand that I'm not making light. But understand that I'm not making light of it because I'm the person on the street or in the home who's having the discussion, and you are, I don't want to say correcting me, but that's what you're doing, but you're educating me.
Absolutely.
So can I walk into the, the shelter or, you know, wherever, where to take advantage of what you're offering?
Absolutely. We are here to help. We are always available. You can always walk into our outreach offices. You can always access information about us on our website, www.shelterforhelpinemergency.org, and you can call our hotline 24/7, every day of the year, 24 hours a day. And that number is 434-293-8509. And to answer your question, I think one of the common misconceptions about domestic violence is that it only encompasses physical abuse. Right. Intimate partner violence, domestic violence, encompasses many, many different forms of abuse. So that could be economic abuse. That could be intimidation, coercion and threats, sexual violence, physical violence, emotional abuse. And we're here to help if you've been experiencing any of those forms of abuse. Right. We are here for all of that.
Right. And it affects everyone. It's it doesn't discriminate against any particular demographic. We have victims who are younger, victims who are older, very wealthy victims, victims who don't have much. It affects everyone. We have male victims. We have victims who are members of the LGBTQ community. So this is something that touches everyone.
Again, our guests today, Kat Dillon and Dorothy Thomas from the Shelter for Help in Emergency. So you serve a wide-ranging group.
Mm-hmm.
You don't leave out men. Mm-hmm. I heard that in that group that you serve, you mentioned men.
Mm-hmm.
Men... And again, I don't want to be completely foolish on this topic, but you serve men.
We do.
Men get abused.
They did.
Yes.
Because they're in male and male relationships?
And in male and female relationships.
Right.
We see, like Dorothy said, intimate partner violence affects everybody. So that could be... a male and male relationship. It could be a male and female relationship. Mm-hmm. It really knows no bounds.
So do you find that, I want to do these statistics.
Okay.
I don't want to get too far from the statistics, but now I feel obligated to ask this question first. Are men less likely to call and ask for help if they are suffering from abuse if the abuse is from a female partner?
They do tend to be less likely to call because there's a stigma attached to it. Men don't like to admit that they are being intimidated or abused by their female partner many times, and so there is a stigma attached to it, and men don't believe it. They can be victims of violence, but they absolutely can be victims of intimate partner violence.
Is that also, because it's not wanting to admit that you can be, you're supposed to be the dominant in the relationship.
Absolutely.
It's one thing in a male and male relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It's something else in a male and female relationship. You're supposed to be the dominant gender.
Mm-hmm.
So we see a lot of stigma around intimate partner violence in general, and people of all genders who do not want to believe that they're a victim of intimate partner violence because of the stigma we place on that in society. And we definitely have, very prescribed gender roles in our society as well. And, one of those gender roles that is a norm in our society is that men, like you said, are supposed to be seen as dominant and as confident and as unable to be hurt. So I think that those two stigmas compound, and it can make it more difficult for male victims to be able to reach out and access the help and services they need. So if they're... Is anybody out there who is a male victim of domestic violence or knows a male victim of domestic violence, they should know that we are here to help, and we are here to offer services. All our services are confidential. All our services are free of charge. And we're here for anyone and everyone.
I'd like, so we can go online again, the Shelter for Help in Emergency. Our guests today, Kat Dillon, Dorothy Thomas, Shelter for Help in Emergency.org. And the phone number again?
Our 24/7 hotline is at 434-293-8509. And people can reach our outreach offices at 434-963-4676.
We will put these numbers up on the podcast after the show. You can always go to Seville. Dan, why can't I remember anything for any link? SevillePodcast.com. We'll find that. We'll put the podcast up and we'll have those numbers there. And one thing that I always find smart about the website is for people who want to go and learn more, who are in an abusive relationship, but who are scared about whether they're being, you know, being walked in upon, you can go to the website and you have that little piece up in the corner. Talk about that.
So, well, I think Dorothy can probably speak more to the elements of being in an abusive relationship and the dangers that come with that. But we do have what we call a quick escape button on our website. And you will find that I think most all domestic violence organizations' websites have this, so that if you are browsing and someone comes into the room, you can quickly hit a button and it will redirect you to a page other than ours.
Right, because you don't want somebody, you don't want your partner to find that you're looking at the Shelter for Help in Emergency and say, what are you doing? What is
Absolutely. That? Absolutely. And yeah, so intimidation is one form of abuse that abusers use. And so you do want to be able to have that quick escape button that while you're reaching out for help, if they do walk in, you can click that button, be redirected to another site, and, you know, they're never aware of the fact that you're trying to reach out for help.
Again, the Shelter for Help in Emergency, Abusive Relationships, Intimate Partner Violence is what we're talking about today on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Our guests, Kat Dillon, Dorothy Thomas. This is 94.7 WPVC, 13 minutes after the hour. Thanks for listening in today. Give us some statistics. We don't need to go in depth, because just the basic ones, I think, frighten people. You can talk about the topic as a title, but some of the basic numbers are frightening.
So, you know, I think as we've started to get into domestic violence is much more ubiquitous than people think. It is 1 in 4, is that correct? 1 in 4 women in their lifetime will experience some form of intimate partner violence. So it really reaches a large, large portion of the world and of the community. And as we spoke to before, it also does not see an exclusion. So we see people of every race, people of every religion, people of every gender, every economic status are affected.
One thing that I saw somewhere, whether because there was an article recently on in Seville Weekly about Whitney French that we'll get into later, and I don't remember whether I read this number in that article or saw it on your hotline. Many people think of the Charlottesville, Albemarle area as a happy place, an overly wealthy, happy place. 1,200 phone calls yearly to this shelter.
Right.
That's a frighteningly large number. We're not talking about talking about 400 women calling three times.
Right.
We're talking about 1,200 different people making calls, correct?
Correct. And those are just the people that reach out to us.
That's... and the word that came to mind is quite poor on my part, bothersome.
Right.
And it's That's a really poor choice of words on my part because it's worse than that.
I mean, it's disturbing.
It is.
And unfortunately, intimate partner violence is not something that we talk about often right. in our society and feel comfortable talking about, which leads to that stigma you mm-hmm. know, that we were talking about earlier. So it is one of those things that you know, many, many people experience. And at the same time, many people don't talk about it, so it can seem on the surface like it's not that big of a problem
right.
or it's not a problem that affects everybody, but it really does.
You know, and we do like to speak on that emotional piece because the emotional abuse is just as important as the physical piece. And you'll often hear people say, well, he's never hit me, so is that really abuse? Or he may yell at me, but he's never been physically violent with me. And so that's one of the things that we try to address, too, is that the violent piece is not just that physical abuse. There's so many pieces that encompass intimate partner violence.
And I think that that's because a lot of people have the misconception that intimate partner violence is about anger. It's not. Domestic violence is about power and control.
Mm-hmm.
And power and control can take many forms. And oftentimes when abuse escalates, it will begin with intimidation, isolation, emotional abuse, economic abuse, you know, holding someone's finances hostage, making it so someone can't hold a job or taking control of all the bank accounts so they don't
right.
have access to money. And those are forms of abuse, very real forms of
mm-hmm.
abuse.
There's also a cycle of violence. Greg, talk about that.
Sure.
Because there's, again, our guest today, Dorothy Thomas, who's the rural legal advocate,
mm-hmm.
and Kat Dillon, the events coordinator for the Charlottesville Albemarle Area Shelter for Help and Emergency, as we talk about domestic violence and intimate partner violence.
Mm-hmm.
The cycle of violence, is that what keeps people from calling, or do you feel that that's a part of what keeps people from calling the first or second time of this happening?
Oh, it absolutely is. Because it generally starts out, like you say, it starts out small. We call it our honeymoon period where everything may be okay, and then there's a period of escalation. And after that period of escalation, it breaks out into the full abuse, but then it goes back into a cooling down period where your partner may say, you know, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do this, I'll never do this again. And it's our nature to want to believe that people can change and people can be better. And when you have someone that you love, you do, you know, want to hope that that person loves you enough that they're going to stop that behavior. But it goes over and over in that cycle. And our people do get trapped in that cycle of going through this abuse. And then there's that hope that, okay, maybe things really will change this time. And it does keep them from reaching out for services.
So if we have the cycle, where does the abuser,
mm-hmm.
where do you think that comes from? Where does someone, because is that a genetic thing? Do you learn that? Does that come from, where do you become
yeah.
a violent
yeah.
person?
I mean, I would say without getting too deep into fields of neuroscience
right.
and sociology, which I will readily admit I'm not an expert on, it really comes from a desire for power and control. And I think that's where it stems in. You know, whatever it is that leads someone to need that, what is the immediate impetus towards abuse is a desire to have power and control over a situation, over another person.
Right. Because we've heard abusers say that they grew up in a home where they witnessed violence, and then we've had abusers who say, no, I had a great childhood. I had a great upbringing. My parents raised me right. I never witnessed violence. And so I wish there was one direct thing that we could point out and say, you know, this is why people do what they do, and that would, you know, help us make great strides and correcting that and stopping that behavior, but there's not one particular answer.
Again, our guest today, Dorothy Thomas and Kat Dillon from the Charlottesville Albemarle Shelter for Help in Emergency. A difficult topic, but an important topic as we talk about domestic violence here today. 20 minutes after the hour on a beautiful Sunday morning. Hang tight. And back in action here on the Sunday morning wake-up call. So, ladies, there's always a way to, or people say this, just leave, get out.
Yeah.
I mean, there's always a way to get out.
Mm-hmm.
You just get up and go. You don't have to be, you don't have to take being hit. Although that's, as we've talked about and we'll continue to talk about for the remainder of the hour, that's not all there is in terms of an abusive relationship. But you hear that from other women all the time, whether you see it in a movie or you have it in a conversation because you've read it in an article or wherever. Couldn't hit me.
Right.
Yeah.
Talk about that. That's not, it's not always as easy as that, is it?
No, it's not. And you do, you hear that quite often. And actually the most dangerous time for a victim of abuse is when they try to leave. That's when you see the highest percentage of domestic violence homicides, actually. So it's never as simple as just leaving. If you have somebody that's controlled your finances, that's controlled your transportation, you have children in common, there's so many reasons why you wouldn't want to leave. And there's still, you know, keep in mind, this is a person that you love. And people always come in and say, you know, he didn't start out like this or she didn't start out like this. So you still have that piece of you, no matter how abusive this person has been towards you, that still loves that person. But, you know, we always look at the things. There's the isolation that people have experienced. A lot of people don't have someone that they can reach out to because they've been so isolated in this relationship. And like I said, when you add those pieces of, I have no job, I have no transportation, I haven't been in the workplace in years, it's not as simple as saying just leave, because how do you start over with nothing?
And, you know, we talk about forms of intimidation and control, and, you know, we talked about this quick escape button, and Dorothy touched on it, can be the most dangerous, one of the most dangerous times in an abusive relationship is when you're trying to leave. So I think that people have a misconception that if you make that decision, you can just walk out the door.
Right.
You may be being watched, you know, you may be being threatened, no matter how bad it is in the situation you're in. If someone's telling you that it's going to get worse if you try and leave, that can be a very real threat and very scary, which is why it's important when someone discloses to you that they're a victim of domestic violence, that you are supportive and empowering, that you're there and you understand it may not be easy to leave, and you stay there as a supportive resource for them.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things you talk about someone who's controlled your finances or somebody who hasn't been in the workplace for a while. I question whether is this area a more difficult area in which to leave because it's an expensive area in which to live. And so if you haven't worked for a while, or even if you are working, it's difficult to leave and lose the income in your relationship.
Absolutely.
And so you find it difficult to leave or even call. And so you can't rationalize in your head, what are you going to do? You know, I can accept the abuse because what happens to me or my children, if I lose the income.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it can, I mean, every barrier that's put in place can make it more difficult. And if you're in an area with, you know, very expensive rent and cost of living, that can be an additional barrier. It is important for people out there to know that we have a lot of services that can help with that beyond our emergency shelter facility. And I think, Dorothy, this is very much what you do, right? You help people who are trying to reenter the workforce.
Right.
Connect with services.
We do, and we work with other nonprofits in the area, and try to link people with those resources that they may need. We've had a very good relationship with many of the nonprofits in the area and other organizations who are there to help people when they need help the most.
Dorothy Thomas here with us, and Kat Dillon from the Shelter for Help and Emergency here, Sunday morning wake-up call. This is WPVC. And Ms. Thomas, your title is the Rural Legal Advocate.
Right.
what makes it rural?
So my focus is on the counties in our area. So I work with clients in Greene County, Louisa County, Nelson County, and Fluvanna County. And so what I will do is help them through that court process, help them obtaining protective orders, linking them to lawyers in the area, linking them with the right law enforcement people that they need to be in contact with, and just being there from start to finish if they do have to be involved in that legal process.
Are there differences in the numbers of abusive relationships in the rural counties versus the city of Charlottesville or the inner ring of Albemarle or the different types of abuse? I mean, we talked about the violent, meaning the hitting
right.
and punching versus
physical violence.
The physical violence versus the non-abusive, which I'm assuming is the isolation and the financial.
Mm-hmm.
Still abusive, but non-physical
right. forms. Non-physical of, forms.
Mm-hmm.
Are there difference in the numbers of those two types in the rural counties versus the city and the urban ring?
I think they're pretty much on par. What we're finding is because in the rural areas you have generally fewer resources and lack of transportation and whatnot, it has made it harder for people to reach out for our services. And so that's actually why my position was created. We've had a legal advocate for many years with SHE, but we didn't have someone who could focus solely on the rural areas. And so that's my job, is to the people that can't get to us, I get out there to them. And but we do find, you know, you have the same type of abusive situations in the counties that you do in this area.
When you, and this goes back to everyone. This isn't just specifically to the rural area.
Mm-hmm.
But when you meaning everyone outside
right.
of the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
When you think you see something, when you think that there is an abusive relationship happening, what do you do? When do you intervene, or do you intervene at all? If it's an adult, if it's
mm-hmm.
children, what steps do you take?
Well, definitely with the adults, if you're a friend of this person, a family member of this person, when you have them alone, you know, definitely talk to them about the situation. Say, this is what I see. You know, do you need help? You do want to empower the victim to be responsible for their own choices. You can't do everything for them and say, you need to leave. I'm going to get you out of this situation. You want to empower the victims to be able to get out of those situations, but be a support system for them. One of the things that we find more often than not is that friends and family over time just kind of wash the hands of the situation, because they may have known this has been going on for quite some time, but because a person won't leave, people get frustrated and say, you know what, I got to wash my hands of it because you won't leave. And so that's how a lot of our victims become so isolated. But just be a support for that person, and then encourage them to reach out for services.
And I think what Dorothy said about empowering victims is very important. I think oftentimes people with the best of intentions have an idea that they can somehow encourage someone to leave by giving them an ultimatum. You know, mm-hmm. if you don't leave, we won't be friends. If you don't leave, you can't have this job anymore. That can be very dangerous and actually counter-helpful. Right. You know, we talk about abuse being about power and control. Using threats and intimidation, even with the best of intent,
right.
that's another form of power and control. So if someone is experiencing that, it's important to listen, to believe them, to empower them, and to be supportive. And like Dorothy said, to stick around, to just mm-hmm. let them know, you know, if you are not ready to leave right now, you know, that is completely your decision, and I'm going to continue to be here. And if you find a time where you are ready to leave, or you need to talk, or you need info on services, right. I'm still going to be here.
Mm-hmm. Because nobody knows the situation better than the victim themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, it's easy to sit back on the outside and say what you think a person should do, but you're not in that home and you're not witnessing all of it. So the victim really does know what's best for them.
Again, our guests today, Dorothy Thomas and Kat Dillon, for the Shelter for Help in Emergency here in the Charlottesville area, shelterforhelpinemergency.org. And the mm-hmm. phone numbers?
Our phone numbers, again, for our 24/7 emergency hotline is 434-293-8509. And people can always call our outreach office at 434-963-4676.
Now, ladies, we were talking about being someone close to the situation mm-hmm. and whether or not to intervene and how to do so. That sounded like what to do with the adult in the situation. Mm-hmm. Do you handle that the same way if there are kids in the situation?
Well, many times we rely on counselors, school counselors, for a lot of help. They can often see things going on as well and reach out to those children and then handle those situations appropriately. It's a little different in a school situation with counselors. They may be mandated reporters and may have to reach out to someone like social services or whatnot to get involved. But we also have an education and outreach counselor that goes into our schools. I believe she goes elementary through?
Yep, through high school.
Through high school, and works with students, helping them identify the signs of abuse, helping them with empowering themselves on healthy relationships, everything of that nature. So we're also trying to reach them early, helping them to recognize these signs, and hoping that if they're experiencing this, they're going to reach out to a teacher that they trust, reach out to a counselor that they trust, even reach out to our education and outreach person when she's in the schools.
You know, we've been talking about these nonviolent situations, because I think for many people, the stereotype mm-hmm. is the male who hits the violent situation, the violent relationship. But in the past couple months, the relationship that has received the media attention mm-hmm. in the Charlottesville area was a nonviolent relationship
right.
with Whitney French and her husband,
mm-hmm.
Ms. Whitney French, who was 33. I believe she passed away on February 26th down in my notes. You can find the article in the Seville Weekly. Not sure exactly when, but you can certainly go to C-ville and look that up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk about that for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a common thing in the aftermath of events like this.
Mm-hmm.
For people to experience shock and surprise, especially if people didn't realize that something was happening. And there are a lot of questions come up, you know, how do you recognize this? How do I help? How do I know this is happening if I'm not seeing bruises, if this person isn't disclosing? And that's right. where I think these, knowing that there are multiple forms of abuse and that these tend to escalate,
because mm-hmm.
Especially when something ends in homicide and people didn't see it coming, that can be very jarring.
Okay.
And that comes, you know, we find from an escalation. These things, you know, very rarely, if ever, come out of nowhere. These
right.
tend to be,
right.
you know, there have been other forms of power and control and abuse that have been going on. So to speak to some of those, we have isolation. And do you want to talk about kind of some of the ways that people get isolated?
Right. So some of the things that you can look for is a person who's been very outgoing that you notice has become a lot more reserved. They're not hanging out with friends and family members the way they used to. Or if they go out, the partner has to always be with them. Or you see that their partner's calling them on the phone every few minutes while they're out. Or they feel like they have to check in with this person all of the time. Sometimes those are some of the signs that there may be some abuse behind the scenes that you may not be aware of otherwise.
This article written in the Seville Weekly, I'm sorry I didn't take down notes on the author of the article and the date that it was written. I'll try and pull that up while we're here. But there's interviews with the mother, so it's not a complete, you know, trying to guess on what's happening. And a key friend of Ms. French. And there's a quote that Whitney was a power woman. And I think, you know, another stereotype is that in these relationships is it's always a weak and dominated woman.
Right.
And so what we have here is a woman who is, you know, she is outgoing. She's involved in multiple organizations in the area. She has a strong career in which she, I believe, had just traveled to New York City and had a presentation that she was had gotten lots of positive feedback for. She'd received a promotion in her job. And she gets a quote that she was a power woman, yet she's, at least in this article, and I'm assuming from the by the Shelter for Help and Emergency, is suffering in an abusive relation or in an abusive relationship through some in isolation and some because her husband won't allow her to do anything without his attendance.
Yeah. Domestic violence, intimate partner violence, it's something that happens to you. I think all too often there's a lot of victim blaming that goes on with the idea that the victim somehow asked for it or tolerated it. That is never the case. It is never something that the victim did. It is never the victim's fault. This is something that happened to the victim. When you really look at it through that framework, you realize that if this is something that's happening to you, it really doesn't matter who you are. It can happen to anybody. And yes, there is very much that misconception that it can't happen to professional women or it can't happen to men. It can happen to anybody. And, you know, it can continue to happen because of isolation, because of threats and intimidation. You know, I think that article touched on there were some threats going on in the relationship, a lot of monitoring. That's another sign you can look for closely. If a partner, if someone you know says, oh, well, I'm wearing this because that's what he likes, you know, choosing their clothes, or, well, I can't go there because he checks my my mileage, so he'll know I've been there. Those are signs of abuse and control. And those we know escalate. And they can get worse and worse. They can escalate to physical violence, intimidation, unfortunately, homicide.
Right. And, you know, when those things start off, when you have somebody who constantly wants to be with you or who wants to know where you are, it starts off, oh, you know, he's worried about me.
And,
you know, he'll say it, I'm just worried about you. I want to know where you are. I want to know that you're safe, or I miss you so much. I just don't, I don't want to be away from you. So it starts off in a very charming manner. And it makes a person feel very loved, you know, that this person loves me so much. They want to be with me. They want to protect me. They don't want to be away from me. And so before you know it, that charm changes into that possessive behavior and whatnot. And so it's very easy to see how even the most confident person can get pulled into that.
that article that I based some of my questions upon, written by Samantha Bars in the March 29th issue of Seaville Weekly, c-ville.com, if you want to read that. Our guests today, Kat Dillon, Dorothy Thomas, from the Shelter for Help in Emergency in our area, shelterforhelpinemergency.org. Hang tight. And here we are back in action, 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, on a beautiful Sunday, May Day, at the Sunday morning wake-up call, the first Sunday in May. Next week, Mother's Day. That's my mother. We'll be giving you guides on parenting. 50 years of being a parent. I think everybody should learn lessons on that. Our guests again, Kat Dillon, events coordinator, Dorothy Thomas, rural legal advocate. I want to make sure that we talk about some of those events coming up. We'll do that in just a moment. Why was the Whitney French death such... Why was it such an issue? Why did it bring so many tears in this area? I mean, it cannot be the first death from domestic abuse in the last several years. Mm-hmm. Was it?
No, it was not. It was not the first domestic abuse homicide in the last few years. I do think, I certainly want to pay respect to the fact that Whitney was a very well-known member of this community and very loved by a lot of people. And, you know, one of those things we talked about, I think a lot of people who knew Whitney were unaware of either what was going on or the level of what was going on. So to feel unaware and then have it end so tragically and violently can be a very, very big shock.
It is, and it's very traumatizing for people. A lot of people second guess themselves. You know, was there something that I missed? Was she reaching out and I just didn't see it? Could I have done something to help her? And so there is a sense of guilt for a lot of people after something like this happens, because, like you said, you have someone who's just so outgoing, does so much in the community, who did so much to help so many other people. And a lot of people were saying, you know, she did so much to help everybody else. Was there something I could have done to help her? And so, sadly, that's what a lot of people go through after something like this. Was there something that I could have done? Was there something that I missed?
And, you know, we're here. I think it's important to note that our organization is here to support victims of domestic violence and their families. We're also here to support people affected by domestic violence. Right. So you can call our outreach offices or our hotline if you think something might be going on. You may not be the one in the situation, but you have a friend or you're curious maybe. You want to know more and you want to know how to help. Give our outreach offices a call. That's mm-hmm. what we're here for. We're here to support you as a member of the community and being a resource right. for victims of domestic violence. So people should know that that's always an option. Mm-hmm. They can always reach out to us to learn more, or if they're concerned about someone else, and, you know, we can give them resources on how they can help and be an advocate.
One of the troubling parts of the article by Ms. Bars in Seaville Weekly was that even though the abusive relationship, again, the nonviolent abusive relationship, the couple, Ms. French and her husband, had been going to counseling and they were asked to spend some time apart. Mm-hmm. He had apparently been sneaking in to the house and taking photos and had set up a camera to take pictures of her. Right. And he had been taking secretive photos of a diary that she'd been keeping about her thoughts on the relationship. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of thing that can lead to these ends. Mm-hmm. I mean, if
So that is why leaving can be one of the most dangerous times in an abusive relationship. I'm sure people are kind of sick of hearing this now, but it's about power and control.
It is.
And so when someone leaves, that's the time when an abuser loses the most power and control.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a desire to get that back by any means possible.
And that's why it's so important, the safety planning piece. And I always tell people, even if they call on someone's behalf, you know, please have them reach out so at the very least we can do some safety planning. And whenever I meet with members of the community and whatnot, that's one thing I stress is that there needs to be some safety planning done, a safety plan always in place. And it's going to be fluid. It's going to change based on the situation. But that's one of the things that is such an important piece when someone is in an abusive relationship.
Can you describe what a safety plan is for people who might not be familiar?
Yeah, I mean, that's really the first time we've heard that phrase this hour.
Mm-hmm. Safety planning, yeah. And so basically a safety plan is a plan that you have in place to help you get out of an abusive situation.
I mean, it sounds like I'm supposed to have a bag packed or when there's a possible hurricane coming, I don't mean to make light of it, but similar.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, when they say the power may go out, I'm supposed to have. That's what it sounds like.
It is, and you want to plan for that situation just like you would plan for anything else. So I always tell people that you want to have any documents that you might need on hand, an extra set of keys to your vehicle, an extra cell phone that you can keep, because many times abusers will take keys to the vehicles, take the cell phones, anything to prevent that person from leaving or from reaching out for help. I always tell people it may be safer to keep a bag somewhere with a neighbor or at work out of sight. If you can store away a little extra money, try to keep some extra money in that bag. Have everything ready so when the moment is right and you know you can get away, you have the things that you need. What we do find is a lot of people, when they leave situations, they're leaving with nothing, just the clothes on the back. The children will often come without things that they need, the formula for the infants, medicine for children, documents that they're going to need to change schools. The moms oftentimes will not have their documents. So I always say if you can't have access to the original, at least make a copy of everything that you can keep, because those are all of the things that are going to help make it a little bit easier for you as you try to escape that situation.
Maybe it was just the phrase you used. Does this happen, especially in the Charlottesville area, we have a large number of immigrants in our area. Does this happen at an equal percentage to immigrants, a larger percentage to immigrants because of the difficulty that comes with living in a different area and everything that happens with moving to a new area and the job troubles and everything else that goes with that?
Absolutely. You know, and our immigrant population is even more isolated because you're coming into a situation where you absolutely don't know anyone. You may not know the language. You may not know the customs. You may not have all the documentation that you need. And, you know, especially now, I think a lot of immigrants who might reach out for help are kind of leery of that right now because we don't know what's going to happen. And so, you know, absolutely abuse occurs in the immigrant population. And one of the things that many abusers in the immigrant population use is the fact that, hey, you know, you don't know anybody here. I could have you deported, things of that nature. And so it's a really tough situation.
Yeah, I mean, they're individual concerns for the immigrant population. It's important for people to know that they can reach out to us, even if they do not have their documents with them or if they are undocumented. You know, we can still accept
people. We're still going to help them.
We're still going to help you. And we do, one of the services that we offer is Spanish-speaking services. So we have a outreach advocate specifically for the Spanish-speaking community. Mm-hmm. And Patty is amazing. She does a lot of the same work that Dorothy and our other legal advocate, Robin, do, as well as many other things. Mm-hmm. So that does not need to be a barrier for someone reaching out to us. We do have those services available. And you can call our hotline, and if you know someone who maybe English is not their first language, they can still call our hotline, and when they call, if they may have difficulty with English, they can just say, I need a translator, and we can set that up so that we can still be there and be a resource for you.
Shelter for Help in Emergency is our focus today. Call them up if you need assistance or... you know someone who may need the assistance. The phone numbers again, Kat?
Yep. Our outreach office is 434-963-4676. And people can reach our 24/7 emergency hotline anytime at 434-293-8509.
50 minutes after the hour. The Shelter for Help in Emergency isn't... rolling in cash, I'm assuming.
We wish we were.
We always wish we were. You know, we make the best use of the resources we have. We are a nonprofit, so we do work off of grant funding and off of donations and fundraising. So we are always looking for donations. We have a few events coming up which can help with that. So you talked about Mother's Day next week. We are in the middle of our annual Mother's Day card sale. So in honor of Mother's Day, if you go to our website or our Facebook, you'll find a link to our Mother's Day card site. And for a $45 donation, we'll send a card to your mother, the special woman or person of your choice, letting them know that $45 has been donated in their honor, and that's going to provide one night of safety and shelter to a woman fleeing domestic violence. So people can visit www.sheltermothersday.org, no apostrophe, or our website or Facebook. And we also have a golf tournament coming up to raise funds. So that is going to be Monday, June 12th at Old Trail Golf Club in Crozet. And proceeds from the event are going to benefit the shelter and our services. Registration is $125 for individuals, $500 for a team. It includes golf, your carts, a goodie bag, lunch, dinner and awards ceremony, complimentary drinks all day. So it's a really great deal. If you're not a golfer but you still want to come and party, you can buy a $50 dinner-only ticket.
Complimentary drinks of what sort?
Complimentary drinks of the adult beverage sort.
Because the more drinks I get up to a certain level, the better my golf gets.
That's right.
Well, and hopefully the more generous you're going to be.
Or
so.
seemingly the better my golf gets.
We want it to be a fun day.
Maybe it's just less I care about.
We want to get those donations.
Exactly. Exactly. So people can, you know, donate in that way and participate either as a golfer or just joining us for the dinner ceremony. They can go to www.sheltergolftournament.org. The link to that site is also on our website and our Facebook. And then there are other ways. You know, we are a nonprofit, so we always need people to donate of their time as well as of their money. We have a volunteer training coming up. It's going to be Tuesdays and Thursdays from May 30th to June 13th with one Saturday session. But the training dates are flexible and can be adjusted to accommodate people's scheduling conflicts if need be. So if you're interested in becoming a shelter volunteer, learning more about how to do that, what that entails, we need people to work on our hotline. We always need people for events, community outreach. You can call our outreach offices and ask for Rachel Silver. Again, that number is 434-963-4676. And if you know teens, this is kind of a fun one coming up. We're starting a teen advisory board. So we're looking for teens to work with the shelter's prevention coordinator. And we're looking to create a new healthy relationships curriculum that's designed by teens for teens. So it's a really great opportunity for local teens to get involved in a great cause, develop leadership skills, add something to their college resume. And again, for more information on that and how to get involved, you can call our outreach offices. So lots and lots of ways to get involved. You can also always go to the website to make a donation directly as well.
My wife likes to, when she travels, she collects the shampoo and, you know, soap bottles and things from the hotels and drops those off. There's a place at the school she works at that collects those and then takes them to a shelter. Is that something that happens at the shelter for help and emergency?
Yeah, absolutely.
We can always use that, and we're always in need because our shelter is always pretty much running at full capacity, and there are things that we always need: paper towels, laundry detergent, dish detergent, diapers for our babies there,
toilet paper. And if you go to our website, shelterforhelpandemergency.org, we have a wish list that will list all of the most needed items, and they do tend to be disposables like that. Mm-hmm. It'll also list if we have any other special items that we're currently in need of, like sheets or mattress pads. So we are always happy and willing to accept donations. People can call our outreach offices about how to get those to us, and go right on the website. I'll give you a nice quick shopping list, if you will. So if you feel like organizing a donation drive at your work or your school, by all means, give us a call. We are happy to have those donations and happy to help you set that up.
Yeah. A couple quick things I want to point out is people who wish to either use the shelter and need to place a call, or people who want to help someone else, you can take your pet. Right?
So we do have a pet safe program. Yeah.
Pet safe program, but you don't leave your pet behind.
Right, right. You don't leave your pet behind. We do have a program where your pet can be fostered or boarded while someone is staying at the shelter with us. They do have to be current on the vaccinations.
Okay.
But so many people won't leave because they don't want to leave their pets behind.
Right.
And if you like me, your pet's your baby too.
And Albemarle County... Police Department Chief Ron Lance has designated a detective to specialize in investigating domestic violence cases, correct?
Correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's doing a great job. We've met him. He's reached out to us and actually works very closely with us. And like you said, he is dedicated solely to domestic violence cases. And that's huge. That really helps us so much. We can call on him. He's even... helped us by going with us if we've had to pick up a client in a situation that may not be so safe. He said, you know what, I don't want you going alone to do this. He'll pick us up and go get that client and do what we need to do. So he's just really been a great resource.
Ladies, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Next week, Mother's Day.
Yes.
All right.
Go get your cards on our website.
Go get your cards on our website.
Take care of Mama.
Kat Dillon, Dorothy Thomas from the Shelter for Help and Emergency. Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake Up Call, only on WPVC-LP Charlottesville.